Welcome to the Level Up English podcast, the best place to come to practice the English language, learn about the British accent and culture, with me, your host, Michael Lavers. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Level Up English podcast. Today we have a long episode, but it's a really exciting one. The reason it's long is because I was having so much fun and there was so much that I wanted to talk about, and I know that you're going to get a lot from this one as well. So my goal today is that you leave this podcast session, you finish listening and you feel motivated and you've learned something new as well. And of course, you've got some nice English listening practice. But anyway, my guest today is Fabio Cerpelloni. He is a podcaster, a language teacher, and a writer originally from Italy. We had a really nice chat today around the topic of his relatively new book, which I have read, and it's a fantastic book. It is called Any Language You Want, 18 Conflicting Lessons for a New Kind of Language Learner. So as far as I know, as far as what Fabio explained to me, this book is based on another book by Derek Sivers. Some of you may know Derek Sivers. I don't really know much about him, as I said in the episode, but he is a very well-known author and perhaps other stuff as well. I need to look into it a bit more, honestly. But this book was based around an idea from Derek Sivers' book. And it's a really interesting read. It's quite short, so if you're a fast reader, you could easily read it in one day. I'm not a fast reader, and yet I finished it in one day, I was proud to say. But basically, the book goes through different methods of learning a language. The first chapter says this is one way to learn, and the next chapter will say, actually, here's the opposite way, which is also how to learn a language. So it kind of gives you different ideas, and it's really interesting. It really gets you thinking about learning, and it kind of just proves that there isn't one correct way to learn a language. So we talk more about that today, of course. We also talk about the topic of accent and whether you should try to lose your native sounding accent from your own language. We talk about an Italian problem, and other countries have this too, where they end their words in vowels, how to improve that pronunciation problem. We talk about other stuff like recording your own voice, whether you should pay for language courses or try to study on your own without them. We also talk about, right at the end of the conversation, challenges that you can set yourself to improve your English or improve your language skills. So whether you are learning English or maybe even other languages too, this will be an interesting conversation, I'm sure. So once again, thank you to Fabio for joining me. If you do struggle at any point to follow our conversation, the transcript is always available. If you want to read the transcripts, it comes up live, which means as we're talking, it highlights the word we're saying. It's really easy to follow. And maybe if you learn a word while you're listening on your way to work and you don't remember what time it was, for example, you can just go to the transcript and you can click on the search function and search for a word or a section of the conversation that you want to go back and listen to again. So if you want to access that, it's available for all members at Level Up English. Go to the website levelupenglish.school and click on that members button at the top of the page. Find out more there. But anyway, I will give it right over to Fabio now. So let's get into our conversation. Hope you enjoy it. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I am very happy to be joined today by Fabio Cerpelloni, I believe is how you pronounce your name. Fabio, I know you are a podcaster, a teacher, language teacher, and also a writer. And I think we'll be talking a lot today, hopefully, about the latter, about your writing and your latest book. So yeah, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Michael. Great. Yes. Thank you. Thank you for having me on your show. You're right. pronunciation of my name perfect, my surname, and I'm an English teacher. My first language is Italian, so I used to be a learner of English. Then I moved to London in 2011. I fell in love with English, and then I became a teacher. That's the short story. And I'm also a writer because I love writing, and I published a book. I'm planning to publish more books, and I work as a freelance writer for English websites, English language learning websites mainly, and that's it. Yeah, what else? I have a cat. This is how I normally end my introduction. I have a cat. So if you're a cat owner, probably you can relate, you know, the kind of life we live.
I love it. That's a great thing to end on. I'm obsessed with cats. Like, cats are my favorite animal. I don't have a cat at the moment, but I'm always, every week I'm going to cat cafes and talking to cats on the street. So yeah, I like to be around them as much as I can. We'll see if That's your cool. cat makes a surprise visit in the conversation.
Yeah,
today.
Probably at some point there.
Could be. Nice.
Could happen.
Maybe we can get into the topic of your book right away. So your book is called Any Language You Want, 18 Conflicting Lessons for a New Kind of Language Learner, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And I really love the idea. It's really interesting. So how you worded it to me was essentially it's kind of goes through different ways of learning a language, right? But each chapter kind of contradicts the previous one. So you've got here's one way to learn and here's another way to learn, which gives the opposite idea. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. This book was inspired by another book called Anything You Want by Derek Sivers and another book called How to Live by Derek Sivers. And in these books, I can tell you how I got the idea, if you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So in Anything You Want, Derek Sivers says, tells stories. He's an entrepreneur. He was an entrepreneur. And in each chapter, it's a very short book, he tells his own stories on how he grew and built a business. Okay, a business that then he sold for $22 million. So quite a successful business. And the book is very simple. He tells personal anecdotes with the aim of giving the reader a message, okay, to inspire the reader, to help the reader build their own business. And I really loved the format of that book because I thought, okay, I can write a similar book on how I learned English. I can tell my own personal stories on things that I did to learn English, to inspire English learners. But I didn't do it, okay? I didn't start writing anything. Then I read another book by Derek Sivers called How to Live, 27 Conflicting Answers in One Weird Conclusion. And in each chapter, Derek Sivers says tells you how to live. Mm-hmm. Basically, he tells you what's the best way to live your life. So in one chapter, he says the best way to live is to travel the world, for example. And because when you travel, you do these things, you know your mind will expand your horizon and all these things. And the book is all, there are no stories in the book. It's all very imperative, like do this, do that, don't worry if this happens, things like this. But each chapter contradicts the next. So in one chapter, it says, travel the world, this is how to live. In the next chapter, it says, stay in one place. This is the best way to live. Get to know your neighbors. Get to know your local community. Do everything for them. These kind of things. And I love the format of this book. And I thought, okay, I can write a similar book on how to learn English. I will tell no stories, but I will just say, okay, to learn English, to learn a language, not just English, do this, do that, you know, study the grammar. I can do a chapter, I can write a chapter on study grammar, focus on grammar only. And in the next chapter, I say, no, don't study grammar, have conversations, for example. The idea of how to live was to tell the reader that there is no one right way to live, but you get to decide, okay? You get to decide according to your own unique situation. I started writing How to Learn English, 27 conflicting answers and one, I can't remember the subheading, but I started writing that book, and it all felt too impersonal because I was only giving, you know, imperative tips on how to learn a language. Mm-hmm. And I thought, it's a bit boring. Even to write, it was boring. Then one day I was running, because I normally go for a run like 3 times a week. It's where I get the ideas and, you know, some inspiration. I had an idea. I thought, okay, no, I know what book I'm going to write. I'm going to write a book where in each chapter I will tell a story, my own personal stories, on how I learned English. But in each chapter, will contradict the next one. So the stories will contradict each other. And that's how I came up with the idea. And it was so fun to write. It was great to come up with ideas that, you know, are in opposition. Is that correct? In opposition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's how I wrote it. I'll stop here because maybe you have some questions. Don't want to go on for too long.
Yeah, I just want to say I love the idea. I'm not so familiar with Derek Sivers. I've heard, well, I know some people who are inspired by him and they're all amazing people. Mm. So I guess he must also be amazing. But I'm not directly familiar. So I wasn't, you know, I haven't read those books that you mentioned, but I do love the idea of sharing those conflicting opposite methods. Because yeah, as you said, just like that approach to living life, there's no right way to live life. And there's also, you know, there's not really a right way to learn a language because as you say in the book, you can, you know, study grammar, but you can also just focus on practicing and not, you know, spending all your time in textbooks. So I guess I like it because
exactly.
I get a lot of questions about that, like how should I learn English and all this stuff. And I suppose if it were that simple, you would just make, you know, one video and then that would be done, right? But yeah. I guess different people can take different things from the book. And, you know, maybe, I'd say maybe nothing in life is black or white, is it? Like,
exactly.
There might be a little bit of both sides you have to take to get the benefit from. Also, it's a very short book, relatively short. I always kind of have some sense of dread. Like, I kind of have a slightly negative feeling when I have to read a book to prepare for a podcast because I'm like, oh, I'm such a slow reader. And how long is it going to take me? Like, I'm a really, really slow reader. But I think this is a great benefit for a lot of the people listening because most of the people will be English learners, you know, not native speakers. Mm-hmm. So if they do want to practice reading an English book, I feel like this could be a good one to start with. Maybe they could finish within a day, perhaps. So that's another benefit, right?
Yeah, I had comments on this from learners, and they said, I read your book in like 2 hours. Because it's like, it's 20 pages. So, sorry, not 20, 80 pages. Mm. So it's quite short. And even my A1 students, I have a class of 70 year olds. So senior citizens, and they are A1 and they could understand it. Okay, not very, you know, it wasn't like reading one of those graded readers, one of those easy books, mm-hmm. but they could understand it. So it's not a difficult read for sure. And I think in this book I say everything I know about language learning, everything I did. I tell you everything I did to learn English, with the idea that the other idea was, it was that learners are exposed to a lot of advice from teachers, YouTubers like me and you, from many people, you know, online they can find podcasts, blogs, anything. And I think they should question the advice that they hear or see.
Mm-hmm.
So the best way, in my opinion, to learn a language is to question every piece of advice that you hear or see, to see if that applies to your unique situation. And I say this in the introduction of the book because I say many people online say that, you know, YouTubers, polyglots, teachers, they say that you shouldn't study grammar, for example. Don't study grammar. Have conversations. Don't worry about, you know, because in real life, you need to have conversations. No one cares about your grammar, your mistakes. And that's true. That's true. But the opposite of that is also true. So if you want to improve your English, how can you not study grammar? Grammar is part of the language. Okay. And that piece of advice, so don't study grammar, have conversations, wouldn't apply to my, for example, to my partner, to my partner's situation, because she's a non-native English speaker as well. We lived in Australia and New Zealand. She can speak very good English, like C1, okay, she's advanced. But she says, she complains sometimes that she makes mistakes, but she doesn't know why. Okay, so she says, I know that sometimes I make mistakes, but I don't really, I wouldn't know how to correct them. But I feel that the sentence that comes out of my mouth is not correct. Mm. Would you say to this person, to my partner, don't study grammar, keep having conversations? I wouldn't. I would say, get a grammar book if you want to improve a little bit and study how English works. Okay. So each piece of advice is a specific tool for a specific situation. But when you're on YouTube, you hear everything, and the YouTuber doesn't know your own unique situation. So it's up to you to decide, okay, this makes sense. This, of course, not. I will try this one. I will see if this works and things like that. And in this book, it's the message that I want to send out. Yeah.
Hey, it's Michael. If you're enjoying the Level Up English podcast and want to continue unlocking the power of effective communication, especially in a second language, then I recommend checking out Think Fast, Talk Smart. This award-winning show is produced by the Stanford Graduate School of Business and is the number one career podcast in over 95 countries. Each week, host and Stanford lecturer Matt Abrahams sits down with experts to discuss the best tips to hone and develop your communication skills. From making small talk that leaves a big impression, to keeping your nerves in check while speaking in front of crowds. There's a reason this show has over 42 million downloads and counting. You'll hear from pros like neuroscientist Andrew Huberman on how to manage speaking anxiety, speech writer and best-selling author Dan Pink on how to take risks in your communication, and psychologist Kelly McGonigal on how to harness nervous energy to fuel powerful presentations. All that and so much more is available on Think Fast, Talk Smart. So, come on, what are you waiting for? Listen every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. And also tell them I sent you. Now, back to the show. Yeah, so I guess whenever you hear that word should, when it comes to language learning, always be skeptical, always question, like, should I do that? Do I really have to do that? Or maybe there's something more to this. I like that. I was curious for you personally if you found that one way or one style of language learning worked best for you, because I know you said, you know, your partner was different, or maybe it depends on kind of the stage of life you're in, like, in other words, how did you balance those two kind of opposite things? Was it you did one then the other, or you did both at the same time? So just to give the learner, the listeners, an example, some of the opposite chapters in your book, we've got, you know, don't worry about mistakes, but on the other hand, take mistakes very seriously. And, you know, on one hand, keep your accent is fine, but on the other hand, try to speak like a native speaker. So there's a couple of examples, but do you get my original question?
Yeah. I get this question quite a lot because sometimes I get emails that say, okay, but what really worked for you? To be honest, all these stories, all these 18 stories worked for me. So everything I say in these 18 stories is something that I did, and it's something that really worked for me. But if I had to pick one thing that really helped me learn English, really helped me speak English as well, is listening. So to me, listening was, I would say, crucial, really, really beneficial, because I could read things, I could write things, but the moment I could study things, but the moment I hear them, I don't know, they stay, they stick, they stick to my mind immediately. And I don't know, I think it's just the way my brain works. And you know that there are different, they call them learning styles or preferences. And listening is what really made the difference in my language learning journey.
Yeah.
But, okay, you asked me about speak like a native or keep your accent. I can tell you what I say in those chapters. Because in Speak Like a Native, I tell a story about a time when I was in Australia and I was a waiter and I tried to speak with an Australian accent. But the guy was Italian, and he realized that he was speaking to an Italian person. And he said, okay, why am I speaking Italian to you? Why am I speaking English to you? You're Italian. And I thought, no, I didn't. Wow. Why?
How did he know?
I'm trying to use my best Australian accent here, but even that doesn't work. And I say that I wanted to sound Australian when I was in Australia. I wanted to sound like a Kiwi in New Zealand. And I wanted to sound British when I was in London, because it would be weird for me to sound different from the other person. I don't know. But in Keep Your Accent, I say that after a number of years, I don't care anymore about my accent, because really it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. If you now say that I have an Italian accent, it's okay, because I am Italian. If you say that I have an Australian accent, okay, thank you. I lived in Australia, and that's why I have this accent. But it's not... What difference does it make? If you have an Australian, British, Italian, Indian, French, it doesn't make any difference, so don't get obsessed. But each chapter makes sense. This is what I want to, I mean, it's not that one is right and the other one is wrong. Both make sense. Did I answer your question, Michael?
No, definitely. I think so. So you you tried all of these methods. And I'm kind of guessing, because this is how it was for me, maybe some of them you tried, you know, you leaned on more heavily at different stages of your life, and then you went the other way. Mm-hmm. I think that's quite natural, right? Like, I've had periods of my Japanese learning where I was really focused on grammar, just trying to kind of fill in the blanks in my knowledge, and then areas more like now where I'm more focused on speaking and not worrying too much about grammar. So I guess they go up and down as well. Or maybe it could be balanced.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't study grammar if I were an A1 learner. Like, if tomorrow I want to study French, I wouldn't start with grammar for sure.
Yeah.
I would start personally, okay? This applies to me, maybe not to you, listener. I would start with reading easy things or listening to easy stories, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree. My old way of learning was starting with grammar, but it's actually quite surprising. If you start with a really basic story or like a maybe A1 graded reader or something like that, it's really surprising how much grammar you can just kind of pick up without studying it. Like, oh, okay, so that's the verb and that's the noun, and you kind of just work them out naturally, which is quite amazing to see.
Yeah. The grammar is there, yes.
Yeah. I think it can be quite nice to study the grammar when you feel like you've got like a block in your understanding, but not just study everything before you need it. That's my current goal, and it sounds like it's the same for
that's
you.
That's good.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about accent, actually. I think you've already answered all my questions before I got to it, but I wanted to... I think this is a quote I took from your book, which I really loved, and this is... I kind of paraphrase it here. Accent is part of who you are. It's like a mirror that reflects your cultural identity. And your native accent is the unique music that your ancestors composed over the years of cultural evolution. I really love that. And I think that's what I think when I hear a different accent, or maybe like you might have a mix of accents, like, oh, I can hear some British there and maybe some Australian as well. And for me, that's really exciting because it kind of gives me some hint, like maybe you're well traveled or you've had lots of cool experiences around the world. And yeah, I feel like it personally, I would say it's more interesting than just sounding British, you know, but that's just my own opinion.
Yeah, it tells you who I am. Like, if I had a very strong Italian accent, you would relate to me. Maybe you love Italy and you say, oh wow, you're Italian, I love your country, you know, I've been there. That's also a way you can start a conversation with a stranger, by talking about your accent. So I think you said it correctly. It's, you read out the paragraph. So it's really who you are, and it tells you about your background. So I think you shouldn't be ashamed of who you are. You shouldn't be ashamed of your country. Well, shouldn't. I don't know if I should use the word should, but unless you're not ashamed of where you come from, then having an accent is totally fine. If you want to sound like a native speaker, well, you're free to do it, because it's you that should decide what to sound like. It's not your teacher. It's not a YouTuber online. If you want to sound Australian or if you want to sound British, you're free to do it. Even if you're not ashamed of your own background. So language learning is free. Like, we live in a world where mostly we can make decisions based on personal choices. I don't know if that's true, but okay, let's not go there.
Hopefully.
So It's really up to you what you want to do with your accent. I don't know what else to add.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, I mean, it is very relatable. Like, I definitely understand that feeling of, you know, oh, my accent doesn't sound like a native speaker. But I don't know, I feel like if I forced to sound like a native speaker, it might just sound weird anyway, because people can see I'm not native, probably, and they're kind of expecting me to sound a little bit different. And I think there's nothing wrong with that in most cases. I did actually want to ask, it's not really related to anything in your book, but a very specific question that a lot of the audience might not relate to. I've had quite a few Italian students over the years, and one of the hardest things that they have kind of had to tackle when it comes to pronunciation and maybe accent is ending every word in a vowel. And I noticed that you know, you don't do this. You have fantastic English, of course, but I kind of wanted to selfishly get some advice for that. So is there anything that you think Italians could do, or any other people that have a similar problem, or is it just naturally over time it goes away?
I think it's also a problem, not a problem, but something that Japanese people do.
Yeah, maybe.
Japanese speakers, they end every word with a vowel. Like, for example, buka.
Buka, yeah. Dogga.
Buka. Or dogga. Yeah, or, I don't know, bottle. So it's basically, it's because in Italian, most words end in a vowel. So we are always looking for that final sound. And I would say, okay, to help Italian speakers, well, first they need to notice that they're doing this. Otherwise, I mean, they need to be aware. So maybe, I don't know, get them to record themselves saying a couple of, pronouncing, you know, a list of words. And then you can model it. So you can say, okay, now listen to, if you want to sound British, listen to how I pronounce these words. What's the difference? This is one thing that you could do. And then say, okay, no, don't say book, 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 and the word there. I think it could be very simple, but, you know, it's hard to, I mean, you wouldn't notice a lot of progress in a couple of days, I guess. So, you know, it took me 6 years to get to a stage where I don't know if I completely removed my Italian accent. I don't think so, but to a stage where I don't sound, I don't speak with a strong Italian accent. So it takes time. I mean, and it takes also conscious effort. You need to do it consciously, deliberately. Mm-hmm. It's not something that it will happen like this. I never did pronunciation exercises, so I never used recordings or shadowing, you know, those pronunciation techniques. But as I said before, listening for me was really, really helpful. So listening to how people pronounced words, listening to what piece of grammar they used, words, I improved my vocabulary by listening, like really paying conscious attention. I don't know if this is the best way to put it, but paying
careful
paying
attention.
Paying attention. Careful attention, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a good message for myself as well, selfishly again, because I get a lot of reading practice these days. And I think reading's amazing for learning vocabulary and seeing, again, noticing that grammar structure. But I don't get much listening practice at all in my languages. And I notice that really affects me when I'm speaking. I'm sounding a little bit too formal. There's a lot of little stuff that you pick up from speaking, like, you know, kind of maybe and all these kind of like, you know, vocal colloquial things that you don't read in a book that really make you sound natural. So I need to work on that. And that's a great tip for listeners as well. And just want to echo what you said, repeat what you said, the recording yourself. I think that's a great tip, whether it is that vowel accent issue, or I think any issue with pronunciation. A lot of the time you don't notice quite how you're doing it wrong or how you're doing it unnaturally. So I think just hearing yourself on a recording, as difficult as that might be, I think that can be a really good tip as well. So yeah, hopefully that will help some people.
I tested that because I did like an experiment with four learners of English, and I got them to record themselves. Then I sent them some questions like, listen to your recording, and they had to tell a story. Okay, they had to tell a story and record themselves. And then in these questions, the question said, have you used any words that you think are not correct? Or did you mispronounce any of the words? Did you feel that you needed a more specific word at some point? So some reflection questions that they could use, that they used to improve their story. And then they retold the story, making changes. Then I looked at the two versions of the story, and lots of improvements. A lot of improvements. I did this as part of my... I'm doing a master's program on language education. So this was one of the assignments. So it's just to say that it was scientifically sound, okay? So it works. Recording yourself works quite well.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. That's come up a few times on the podcast, and I think it's always a great thing to do. Even though I don't do it that much, but... I think if people are struggling with pronunciation, it's a nice tip. I wanted to ask you about paid courses. So this is something that you mentioned in the book at some point as well. So what is your personal experience with taking paid courses to learn English or any language?
When I was in Italy, of course, I studied English in school and learned nothing. Then I went to London, and because I was in London, I was living there, I thought I didn't need a course. I was there, I was working at Pret a Manger. I'm sure you're familiar with
Pret a Manger. Oh, yeah, very famous, very popular cafe, yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, okay, I'm here, I'm in London, I'm surrounded by people from all over the world. I'm speaking English every day. I don't need to study. This is how I will improve my English. And my English was improving. But then one day, a colleague said to me, you should take an English course. And I thought, why? Why do I need a course now? You know, here in the kitchen in Pret a Manger, in this cafe, we're all foreigners, and he said, we learn shit English, he said. And I thought, okay, so are you taking a course? And he said, yes, I'm taking a course. They teach you everything. They teach you pronunciation, vocabulary, listening, writing. I thought, this could be interesting. Okay, I'll take a course. And that was one of the best things that I did in my English language learning journey. Because I learned many things that I didn't know before. I started writing for the first time, and, you know, I had a teacher who gave me feedback. I studied for 6 months. I took an English course for 6 months while I was working. And then at the end of that course, I did the first certificate in English. And I think it's a great way to learn, but it's not the only way to learn. Like, maybe you don't need a course. Maybe you can just take, you can study by yourself, because that's what I say in the next chapter. I say, in Australia, when I was in Australia, I took zero courses. I had no teachers. And I studied a lot by myself. I have somewhere there, all the English grammar news, English vocabulary news, books, collocations in news. And I used those to study by myself. I read a lot. I practiced, the boring grammar exercises. But to me, they were not boring. They were like doing crosswords. You know, you have the rules on one page, and then you have the gap fills on the opposite page, and that was good as well. So I say the best thing to learn a language is not to take courses. You can do everything by yourself, and you can decide what to do, what to study, what to watch. Because when you're in a classroom, if you have a good teacher, you have some degree of autonomy. So they ask you, probably, they could ask you, would you like to watch this movie or that movie? But it's all, you know, there is a teacher there, and the teacher has to lead the class. But if you study by yourself, well, you've got YouTube. Most things on YouTube are free. Well, actually, not everything on YouTube is free. And so that's, I don't know. Sometimes, sorry if I start rambling. No,
it's all interesting.
But the courses that I took were that one in London. Then I took another one in New Zealand. But that was more advanced because I was studying for the C2 proficiency. So it was a preparation course. And in London, I also took an IELTS course because, you know, I was like, okay, I want to study for IELTS. I didn't need IELTS at all. I didn't need to, I didn't need to study in a university in London. I didn't need it. But I thought, okay, no, I want to take the IELTS now. I've heard of this exam, IELTS. It's difficult, so I want to take it. And I took a 3-month preparation course. So three courses, two of them were in London, another one in New Zealand.
Nice. Yeah, I think this is another way that the book works quite well is there's two extremes, right? On the one extreme, there's someone that kind of, they join an English course, maybe an in-person course or online course, and maybe they go there once a week and that's all they do. And they're probably not going to improve that much because they're only relying on the course to help them improve. And on the other end, there's people who they just want to self-study, but it can be quite overwhelming when you're on the internet and there's so many resources, especially for English. Yeah. So I found personally, one of the best things I did in my Chinese learning was about a year ago, I was studying totally independently up until that point. And it was kind of improving very slowly. And then I found an online course. It wasn't like a live teaching course, but it just had some structure that you could study lessons in a structured way. And that made such a huge difference in my learning because I didn't have to think, should I be doing this or this? What's better? I just had some lessons to follow and it was very simple. And it kind of the course decided for me what grammar was suitable for my level. I didn't have to worry about that. So, I think people that can read the book and listen to this conversation maybe can start thinking about ways they can maybe change things that are not working so well, or maybe there's some areas in which they're too focused on one side and not having a kind of a more balanced view. So, yeah. Paid courses can be good, but not maybe don't have to be the only thing you do, right?
Exactly. Maybe you can write a similar book like to the one I wrote, because I think this is actually what I say in the introduction. If you have learned a language, well, I hope that you will write a similar book and tell the world how you did it, because there's nothing really... there's nothing really extraordinary about what I did to learn English. It's just personal. And I don't know, maybe you can write a similar book on how you learned languages and tell the world on how you did it. Because it would inspire people. It would be another way. Because I love giving advice based on what I did. So instead of saying, you should do this, I really love people when they give you advice by saying, this is what I did. Mm. This really worked for me. See if it works for you. If it doesn't, forget about what I said.
Yeah.
So this is kind of my approach to helping language learners.
Yeah. I think I haven't listened to my old episodes in a long time, but I kind of have the feeling that people that do listen to episode one and then today, they might notice that difference in me as well, where at the beginning I was less experienced and I was saying, you know, oh, the best way to learn English is to do this. And these days I'm really trying much more consciously to say what works for me is this, but maybe you could consider this one or this one and not being so prescriptive, which means not telling people how to do it. But can I also ask you about challenges? So
anything, yes.
Maybe not anything, we'll see. But in the book, challenges came up a little bit. So you were setting yourself challenges, I believe, to learn English. So one example was something about making phone calls. So I wondered if you could, if you remember them, you could talk about what challenges you were setting yourself and maybe some ideas for the listeners to set themselves to help them, you know, improve their English.
Yeah. The one that you mentioned, making phone calls, I think it's in chapter Take Real World Challenges. Funny, I don't remember the titles of my chapters. it's the chapter before that, it was about exams. So I say, take language exams because they are challenging. They will motivate you to pass. You know, you will have to do your best to pass an exam, and that will force you to study, to practice, to really learn. And I say, I took many exams. I took the first certificate in English, the IELTS, the C2 proficiency. And they were really helpful because I had a goal in mind, and the goal was, I want to pass this exam. I want this certificate. So this is how to learn a language. Take language exams. But in the next chapter, I say, taking language exams is the most boring thing you could ever do to learn a language because, you know, you have to, there are other things that you can do that are way more fun, way more interesting, and way more practical. And I say, this is what I didn't do that I could have done. And I list, I think, five, probably. And one is making phone calls. So grab a phone and call, I don't know, a hotel in the UK, and see how you go. See if you can book a room there. But then, of course, don't book it. this is a big one. Start a podcast. Why are you not starting a podcast? It's free. You can speak into a microphone for 24 hours if you want. You can practice fluency for, you know, as long as you want. You don't have to be on video, you know, on camera, so no one will see you. You can edit things. So if you feel like you made a very big mistake and you're ashamed of that mistake, you can edit things out. You can have guests, other language learners. Actually, there is a podcaster. I don't know if you know him. His name is Daniel Goodson.
No, I don't know.
He's a learner of English who started a podcast to improve his fluency.
Oh, amazing.
And he has two shows. One is my fluency podcast, my fluency podcast, and the second one is the Vocab Man. So on my fluency podcast, he even interviewed Luke Thompson, mm-hmm. from Luke's English podcast. So he has guests there. He has conversations, and he told me, he was on my show as well. He told me, I improved my fluency a lot by having a podcast, because you are forced then to speak and to have conversations if you have guests. And on the Vocab Man, he does, he teaches words that he has recently learned. So he says, I learned this word. Then he gives the definition. So he does some teaching there. So he teaches the words that he learned. And that's, I think, very useful, teaching what you learn. Yeah, so it's very easy today to do these things. I can't remember the other ones. Take up world challenges, chapter 10. Start conversations with native English speakers on the London Underground. That's something I never did.
Mm.
I could have, you know.
That's very scary.
Started conversations with them. Yeah, it is scary. It is scary.
I feel like that's like the worst place to start a conversation, because everyone on the Underground, they're so grumpy and they're always like looking at the floor. I think you have to be super extroverted to do that. Like, I don't think I could do it. I guess you could change the challenge to something, you know, maybe a little bit uncomfortable, but not extremely outside your comfort zone, right?
Yeah.
Depends on the person.
Yeah. And what else have I got? Write short personal stories and post them on social media. Mm. Okay. That's not super challenging, but open a blog, start a YouTube channel, start a podcast. I think starting a podcast is really, like, more people should do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not should, but more people would benefit from doing it.
Yeah, I agree. I would say for myself, as as a native English speaker, it's been one of the best things I've done for my speech and my fluency too, because you might think, well, Mike, you're already fluent, Michael, but you know, you can always develop more fluency and you know, speak more kind of naturally with a flow. So when I first started the podcast, there was no way that I could have this conversation now, because even though it may not be evident if you listen, I was recording and then thinking for like 15 seconds and then talking for 10 seconds. So I had to cut out so many pauses in the first few episodes, and then just kind of that practice allowed me to speak and think faster without having to keep stopping to think. Obviously, the same is going to happen for a second or third language as well. That it's going to speed up your speaking time and make you sound more natural. So it works if you're a native speaker or not. I think it's a great tip.
Yeah, and you're like in your own room recording. No one is watching. No one is listening, unless you publish. So you can make as many mistakes as you need before having, you know, the final version that you want the people to, the world to see or hear. Yeah.
And I guess
it's great.
It doesn't
great.
Have to be.
And it's free.
Yeah, it's free. And it doesn't have to be public as well. Like, you could even just start a blog or something and keep it private and just, you know, make it look all pretty and nice and just have somewhere where you can post writing or audio or just some kind of almost like a journal, right? That you keep coming back to and then putting it out there. But I mean, if it's public, you might get feedback, which could be a bonus.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
That's always nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe can I ask you one? I want to, maybe we can finish up in a second so we don't go on too long. But one final question. You can make it quick or long, whatever you like. Kind of unrelated, but I thought it could be fun. So again, as you said, the book was inspired by Derek Sivers, who I don't know a whole lot about. But if you can think of anything, can you share one other thing that you've learned from Derek Sivers?
Okay, the best thing that I like, so just to give some context, Derek Sivers is, you know, that we have mentors, like we have people that we really look up to, and we want, maybe we need guidance from them, and we call them up. It might be a friend, it might be a teacher, it might be anyone. I have those in my life, in the real world life, but I have also some of these people online that when I have a problem or when I want some advice, I look for some, I don't know, interviews or blog posts that they wrote, and I feel, okay, what would this person say? What would this man or woman say to me if I asked this question? And Derek Sivers is one of those online mentors that I have for free, because I consume, let's say, his content. I've watched all his interviews, and the thing that keeps coming up is that he reflects on things, which is something rare. So I don't think that people reflect enough before making decisions. So if I say, he gives this example, if I asked you to, sorry, it's very unstructured. I don't know where I'm going here in my mind, but, if I asked you to name, some really good painters, who would you name? And probably you would say, okay, Picasso. Okay, but that's only the first answer that comes to mind. There are many others. It's not just Picasso, because that's only the first thing that comes to mind. And in life, it's the same. Like, you make decisions. I feel that I make decisions based on the first thing that comes to mind. But then I should reflect on that, and I need to see if there is another way of looking at that thing. Whatever belief I have, whatever idea I have, question that belief. And this is what Derek Sivers encourages people to do. By, I don't want to talk, you know, for him, but this is what I got from him, from the hundreds of interviews that I've watched, not hundreds, but dozens. And this is why I opened my book with his quote, which is, whatever brilliant ideas you have or hear, the opposite may also be true.
Nice.
So I explained it in the worst possible way, but I hope you got the message.
Yeah, reflection is important, is essentially it, right? Maybe if you don't mind, I could share what that meant to me, because I think a big problem that I have, or I have had, is getting really stuck on binary decisions, like this one or this one, black or white, which choice should I make? And it's kind of part of one of my New Year's resolutions for this year, because I would get so stuck on choosing, you know, this meal or this meal, and I would really like not know what to choose. But then if you reflect on it and kind of take a step back, there's often a third choice or a few more choices that you haven't considered, because you're so focused on those two choices. And often the third choice might be a compromise, or it might be some way that works even better than the others you thought of. I know it's not exactly what you said, but I think that's what I thought of, which if you kind of reflect on your beliefs and your decisions, you might find other solutions. So I like that. Yeah. That's what I want to say.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It totally makes sense. And by the way, he's writing another book now called Useful, Not True, where basically he says that anything that starts with "I believe" is not true. So it's just a belief that can, like, you can destroy it in a second. Like, I believe learners of English should study grammar. Okay, that's not true. It's just one way of looking at language learning, by studying grammar.
Right, yeah.
So Yeah, I think this is fascinating. The thing, the idea that everything is everything and the opposite of everything both make sense. So, okay.
Yeah, nothing is black and white.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, I love it too. Thank you. I mean, this has been a bit longer than I would normally do in a conversation, but I've really enjoyed diving into these topics. I hope the listeners don't mind. And if you've made it this far, then and thank you. Maybe before we go, would you like to share one more time where people can find the book and also anywhere else people can find you on the internet?
Yeah, they can find me on... Thank you, Michael. I really enjoyed the questions and the conversation as well. Thank you so much. They can find me on my website. It's all there. The www.fabiocerpelloni.com, C-E-R-P-E-L-L-O-N-I. That's my surname. And they will find my blog, my YouTube channel, my podcast. It's all there.
Fantastic. And if people want to tap on it and not have to spell everything out, I'll put a link in the show notes as well where they can just tap and see it right away. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been a great chat, and we'll have to chat again sometime in the future.
Yeah, on my show next time.
I'd be happy to. Yeah, I'll link to it as well below if we do that, so people can go directly there. That would be great.
Fantastic. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you very much. You have been listening to the Level Up English podcast. If you would like to leave a question to be answered on a future episode, then please go to levelupenglish.school/podcast. That's levelupenglish.school/podcast. And I'll answer your question on a future episode. Thanks for listening.